Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed for people learning English. Today on the show, we have a report from Susan Shand. Anne Ball brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close with an American story, The White Heron by Sarah Orne Jewett. But first, Jonathan Evans and I tell about a touching reunion in Vietnam. The mother and daughter wondered about each other over the years. They separated in Vietnam in 1975, when the girl was only 3. The child went to the United States to grow up with an American family. The mother stayed in Vietnam. But last month, Lee Mai Boughton Small, now age 47, met with her birth mother, Nguyen T. Depp, in Ho Chi Minh City. It began with awkward hugs. The 70-year-old Depp was afraid her daughter would be displeased with her. But Lee Mai explained to Depp that she felt no anger about being sent to the United States. The two women hugged, cried, and laughed. Lee Mai said what struck her most sharply was realizing she had lost more than a mother. She had lost a Vietnamese family. She said, "There was love there, and aunts and uncles, and that never crossed my mind." She also said she realized how hard it had been for Depp to decide to send her daughter to an unknown future.
In 1975, in Vietnam, American troops were leaving Vietnam after 20 years of conflict. Communist forces were about to take control of the country's capital, then called Saigon. Many South Vietnamese parents and guardians sought a safer homeland for their children. As a result, more than 3,000 children caught in the conflict were flown to new families overseas. The action became known as Operation Baby Lift. Among them was Lee Mai Boughton Small. Depp met Lee Mai's biological father, an American soldier named Joe O'Neill, in Saigon in the early 1970s. She lost contact with him after he was sent home in 1973. The little girl, who the mother had named Phung Mai, was about a year old then.
Depp said her friends suggested she get her little girl onto an Operation Baby Lift flight to protect her from the fighting in the country. "I panicked and decided to send Mai away. It took only a week from when I filed her paperwork till when the plane took her away," said Depp. Like other parents who gave up their children, Depp believed she would reunite with her child soon after the violence ended. But Vietnam and the United States, where most of the children were sent, did not reestablish normal ties until 1995. The last time Depp saw her daughter was just before her flight out. Depp was about to walk out of the building when, she said, the little girl called out, "Mom, don't leave." Depp remembered, "At that moment, all I wanted was to turn around and take her home." But she did not. Depp said she cried every night for months. But Depp never gave up hope of finding Lee Mai.
Li Mai knew from an early age she was adopted and half Vietnamese. But no one had any idea who her birth parents were. The children of Operation Baby Lift arrived with little or no documentation. Li Mai said she enjoyed the good life Depp had hoped for. She lived happily with her adoptive parents and a brother and sister in a nice house. All three children were adopted. Li Mai wondered about her birth mother from time to time when she was growing up. But she did not start looking for her until 2000, after she married and decided to have children.
The search began with a trip to Vietnam with her adoptive mother. The women knew only Li Mai's Vietnamese name, the town she was born in, and the group home she was placed in just before Operation Baby Lift. But the group home did not have any helpful information. Its records dated from a month after Operation Baby Lift ended. It had no documentation from the period that Li Mai was there. So she gave up her search and went on with her life.
Then, 4 years ago, Li Mai found the website Ancestry.com. She sent the company a small amount of her genetic material for testing. The website began sending her information periodically about distant relatives. In October, however, Li Mai received a much more interesting email from Ancestry.com. The company had found a connection between her and a sibling or first cousin. Then, another email arrived. It read, "I think you're my sister. Your Vietnamese mother is looking for you." Li Mai exchanged several messages with the woman. The two shared a father who had died in 2011. A man in Vietnam saw the death announcement and told O'Neill's American children about Depp and Li Mai. At last, the half-sisters connected. "And I think it just exploded from there," Li Mai said.
For Depp, Li Mai was always a three-year-old child. Seeing her as this grown-up woman with a family, it isn't as emotional as when I looked at her photos as a small baby, she said after the reunion. But the meeting did give her peace about her daughter's life in America. "I love her a lot, and I am at ease because Mai has grown up, having her own family, can take care of her own self, as opposed to before, when it was always, 'Is my baby still alive? If she is, what life does she have? I was worried she had it hard.'" Li Mai thought about bringing her birth mother back to the United States. But Depp likes her life in Vietnam. With technology, Li Mai thinks they can stay in touch. She wants to share pictures of her husband and three children and their future experiences. "So I'm hoping that she can get into the iPhone," Li Mai said with a laugh. The mother and daughter are still divided by an ocean, but now they are also connected.
The West Bank town of Bethlehem is busy getting ready for Christmas. As bright lights and other holiday decorations go up in Manger Square, Bethlehem is preparing for its best Christmas in 20 years, the town's mayor said. 5 new hotels are being built, and some existing hotels are expanding. The town has even extended the opening hours of the Church of the Nativity, the place where many Christians believe Jesus Christ was born. But even after 3 years of relative peace, many people are still worried. Bethlehem is just a short drive from Jerusalem in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. The local economy depends on the money spent by visitors. Whenever there is unrest anywhere in the Middle East, tourists stop coming, and that can lead to a financial disaster. Sitting in his office overlooking the newly lit Christmas tree in Manger Square, Mayor Anton Salmon said Bethlehem may get more than the 1.5 million visitors it received last year. Since 3 years ago, things are going up. This year is better than 2018, and 2018 was better than 2017, and it is a continuous increase, Salmon told the Reuters news agency. For years, the biggest problem was the small front door leading to the Church of the Nativity. Visitors must bend over and crouch to enter. The door was once large, but reduced in size hundreds of years ago by Christian crusaders. During the Mamluk and Ottoman Turkish rule, the door was made even smaller to prevent people driving vehicles from entering the church. For the first time this year, officials extended the building's opening hours from sunset to 8 at night, Salmon said. In 2020, officials plan to enlarge the town's bus station and to work on ways to limit traffic on the narrow road leading to Manger Square. The town will even consider asking tourist groups to register before arriving. If the number will be high and the church can't receive all of them, we need to look for other plans that can be helpful, he said. Townspeople are excited about a new attraction, a piece of wood said to be from the manger used by the baby Jesus. The wooden relic arrived back in Bethlehem last week from Rome. But the town is also worried. Bethlehem enjoyed a strong economy until the Palestinian rebellion against Israeli rule in 2000. As the violence between Israelis and Palestinians worsened, visitors stopped coming. Now Israel's high wall rises up over the northern entrance to Bethlehem and separates it from Jerusalem. Palestinians call Israel's barrier an attempt to take their land. Israel says the wall has reduced attacks on its citizens. Joey Canavati directs the Alexander Hotel in Bethlehem. He said his family had little hope for the town during the past 10 years, but now it expects a lot of visitors through 2021. The hotel is expanding from 58 to 110 rooms. Business has been booming. We have never seen it like this ever before, he said. But, he said, it's always about stability. I'm Susan Shand.
This week, we answer a question from Maggie. She writes, could you explain to me what is the difference among what's going on, what's up, and how is it going? Do they mean the same? Maggie. Dear Maggie, this is a good question because these are sayings we use all the time. They can all be used when greeting someone, usually someone you know. Take this example. You run into a friend you have not seen for a while at the store. "Hi, Dave," you say. "Good to see you again. What's going on?" Dave may say,
"Maggie, I've been so busy at work. All is well. What's up with you?"
Dave wants to know what Maggie has been doing recently. This is a wide-open, general question. It is another way of saying, "What's new?" The expression, "What's going on?" can also be used if you are angry and accuse someone of doing something wrong, as in this example.
"What's going on here? Did I say you can use my motorbike?"
Now, when it comes to "How is it going?" you can use these words as part of a greeting when you see a friend. It can be a general question or more direct about something. Here is an example. You see your friend Mary at the bus stop. You know her mother was sick and in the hospital. "Hi, Mary. I've been thinking about you. How is it going? How is your mom doing?" Here is another example where it can be used at work.
"James, how's it going with your project? Will you have it done on time?"
And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
And now, our program, American Stories.
The forest was full of shadows as a little girl hurried through it one summer evening in June. It was already 8 o'clock, and Sylvie wondered if her grandmother would be angry with her for being so late. Every evening, Sylvie left her grandmother's house at 5:30 to bring their cow home. The old animal spent her days out in the open country, eating sweet grass. It was Sylvie's job to bring her home to be milked. When the cow heard Sylvie's voice calling her, she would hide among the bushes. This evening, it had taken Sylvie longer than usual to find her cow. The child hurried the cow through the dark forest, following a narrow path that led to her grandmother's home. The cow stopped at a small stream to drink. As Sylvie waited, she put her bare feet in the cold, fresh water of the stream. She had never before been alone in the forest as late as this. The air was soft and sweet. Sylvie felt as if she were a part of the gray shadows and silver leaves that moved in the evening breeze. She began thinking how it was only a year ago that she came to her grandmother's farm. Before that, she had lived with her mother and father in a dirty, crowded factory town. One day, Sylvie's grandmother had visited them and had chosen Sylvie from all her brothers and sisters to be the one to help her on her farm in Vermont. The cow finished drinking, and as the 9-year-old child hurried through the forest to the home she loved, she thought again about the noisy town where her parents still lived. Suddenly, the air was cut by a sharp whistle not far away. Sylvie knew it wasn't a friendly bird's whistle. It was the determined whistle of a person. She forgot the cow and hid in some bushes. But she was too late. "Hello, little girl," a young man called out cheerfully. "How far is it to the main road?" Sylvie was trembling as she whispered, 2 miles. She came out of the bushes and looked up into the face of a tall young man carrying a gun. The stranger began walking with Sylvie as she followed her cow through the forest. "I've been hunting for birds," he explained, "but I've lost my way. Do you think I can spend the night at your house?" Sylvie didn't answer. She was glad they were almost home. She could see her grandmother standing near the door of the farmhouse. When they reached her, the stranger put down his gun and explained his problem to Sylvie's smiling grandmother. "Of course you can stay with us," she said. "We don't have much, but you're welcome to share what we have. Now, Sylvie, get a plate for the gentleman." After eating, they all sat outside. The young man explained he was a scientist who collected birds. "Do you put them in a cage?" Sylvie asked. "No," he answered slowly. "I shoot them and stuff them with special chemicals to preserve them. I have over 100 different kinds of birds from all over the United States in my study at home." "Sylvie knows a lot about birds, too," her grandmother said proudly. "She knows the forest so well, the wild animals come and eat bread right out of her hands." "So, Sylvie knows all about birds. Maybe she can help me then," the young man said. "I saw a white heron not far from here 2 days ago. I've been looking for it ever since. It's a very rare bird, the little white heron. Have you seen it too?" he asked Sylvie. But Sylvie was silent. "You would know it if you saw it," he added. "It's a tall, strange bird with soft white feathers and long, thin legs. It probably has its nest at the top of a tall tree." Sylvie's heart began to beat fast. She knew that strange white bird. She had seen it on the other side of the forest. The young man was staring at Sylvie. "I would give $10 to the person who showed me where the white heron is." That night, Sylvie's dreams were full of all the wonderful things she and her grandmother could buy for $10. Sylvie spent the next day in the forest with the young man. He told her a lot about the birds they saw. Sylvie would have had a much better time if the young man had left his gun at home. She could not understand why he killed the birds he seemed to like so much. She felt her heart tremble every time he shot an unsuspecting bird as it was singing in the trees. But Sylvie watched the young man with eyes full of admiration. She had never seen anyone so handsome and charming. A strange excitement filled her heart, a new feeling the little girl did not recognize. Love. At last evening came. They drove the cow home together. Long after the moon came out and the young man had fallen asleep, Sylvie was still awake. She had a plan that would get the $10 for her grandmother and make the young man happy. When it was almost time for the sun to rise, she quietly left her house and hurried through the forest. She finally reached a huge pine tree so tall it could be seen for many miles around. Her plan was to climb to the top of the pine tree. She could see the whole forest from there. She was sure she would be able to see where the white heron had hidden its nest. Sylvie's bare feet and tiny fingers grabbed the tree's rough trunk. Sharp, dry branches scratched at her like cat's claws. The pine tree's sticky sap made her fingers feel stiff and clumsy as she climbed higher and higher. The pine tree seemed to grow taller the higher that Sylvie climbed. The sky began to brighten in the east. Sylvie's face was like a pale star when at last she reached the tree's highest branch. The golden sun's rays hit the green forest. Two hawks flew together in slow-moving circles far below Sylvie. Sylvie felt as if she could go flying among the clouds, too. To the west, she could see other farms and forests. Suddenly, Sylvie's dark gray eyes caught a flash of white that grew larger and larger. A bird with broad white wings and a long, slender neck flew past Sylvie and landed on a pine branch below her. The white heron smoothed its feathers and called to its mate, sitting on their nest in a nearby tree. Then it lifted its wings and flew away. Sylvie gave a long sigh. She knew the wild bird's secret now. Slowly, she began her dangerous trip down the ancient pine tree. She did not dare to look down and tried to forget that her fingers hurt and her feet were bleeding. All she wanted to think about was what the stranger would say to her when she told him where to find the heron's nest. As Sylvie climbed slowly down the pine tree, the stranger was waking up back at the farm. He was smiling because he was sure from the way the shy little girl had looked at him that she had seen the white heron. About an hour later, Sylvie appeared. Both her grandmother and the young man stood up as she came into the kitchen. The splendid moment to speak about her secret had come. But Sylvie was silent. Her grandmother was angry with her. Where had she been? The young man's kind eyes looked deeply into Sylvie's own dark gray ones. He could give Sylvie and her grandmother $10. He had promised to do this, and they needed the money. Besides, Sylvie wanted to make him happy. But Sylvie was silent. She remembered how the white heron came flying through the golden air and how they watched the sun rise together from the top of the world. Sylvie could not speak. She could not tell the heron's secret and give its life away. The young man went away disappointed later that day. Sylvie was sad. She wanted to be his friend. He never returned. But many nights, Sylvie heard the sound of his whistle as she came home with her grandmother's cow. Were the birds better friends than their hunter might have been? Who can know?
That's our show for today. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.